Okay. So I think this is our sixth year on the Morning Vuchim, if I'm not mistaken. And the truth is that originally I wanted to start the theory of negative attributes today. We might hit a little bit at the end. But I told you C-149 with regard to the Rambam statements about angels. And that in turn led to a whole interesting thought process for me. And I want to talk about the Rambam and angels right now. Okay? And let's talk about angels in general for a minute. The truth is that this isn't really filling in my debt, but I gave a shiur 10 years ago on angels in Shiva. Since then, I haven't given it. And there used to be this joke in my Vod. What are we talking about this week, Rabbi? Shadim, Shadim. Or angels, angels. That was the whole thing. I have this long-standing debt to give a shiur on angels and demons. Not quite there yet, but I'll start to touch upon it at least today. When that happens, by the way, it's going to be live broadcast around the world. And it's going to be amazing. I'm just kidding. But there was a long-standing joke for like 5 years. Got to talk to like Michael Hino about it. You know, whatever it is. Anyway, yeshiva humor. Okay. In 149, let's remember the structure here. The Rambam's been talking about God not having a body. Right? And I mean, that's the upshot of it. Obviously, there's a lot of other things going on here. And in the context of that, he's been interpreting a lot of passages in the Torah. Now, in 149, right before 150, meaning right before, and this can't be an accident, he gets into starting to define or talk about the definition of God and what God is or what God is not. Okay, he gets into the issue of angels. Okay, now, let's think about this for a minute. Right? If you read the Torah, what do you think angels are? Or Tanakh?
Spiritual beings with a physical form. Some kind of physicality.
Okay, right.
Physicality, right. Bones, face.
Right. I mean, legs. Prove it. I mean, there are all sorts.
They interact with people.
I'm sorry?
They interact with people in a physical manner, seemingly.
Right, there are all sorts of stories of, let's just assume right now that the term malachim, right, is, there'd be others as well. Ofanim, chayot, I mean, there's
take whatever form they need to in order to convey the message that they're
sent. Okay, that's already... In other words, but there's some form of physicality here, right? In other words, now, the question becomes, how's this physicality happening, right? And let's say you're a Jew and you pray, like all of us do, right? And you recite things like Kedusha or Birchus Kriyat Shema. Rafanim v'chayet ha-kodesh, b'rash gadol minasim, right? Something's going on there, right? Kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. In other words, there's some form of celestial, you know, I love how they like translate it, like celestial glory, or whatever it is, but something's going on here, right? But, you know, and then, you know, listen, we have names, right? It seems to be identities. There's all sorts of interesting things going on with angels, right? Oh, you're talking about Breshia Yudchet, right, with Afra. We'll get to that a little bit. But angels seem to exist. In other words, if you just look at the Torah, the Tanakh, or for that matter, Chazal, right, even in Halacha, right, there's all these notions of the angels don't understand Aramit, right, and therefore, you know, there's all sorts of tefillah that get impacted, or why do we say tefillah shekishne nichras lebet kiser, right? Also in brachos, right? There's all sorts of discussion about angels being involved in the world, whatever it might be. Now, then it gets to other questions. Well, do angels have willpower, right, and whatnot? And with the vast majority of, or a strong majority of the sources, clearly indicated that angels do not have willpower, meaning they are free choice, that they're being directed by God. Meaning, as Father says, they can't make mistakes, but that's why.
All these, like, agadotot, where the angels are arguing between each other.
There's arguing, there's even, as Rabbi Leo Young proved or argued in many, many, many years ago, his famous rabbi in New York many years ago, that...
musician?
Huh? Rabbi Leo Young?
No, the musician?
No, not the musician, the rabbi. Anyway, so, what's happened to modern orthodoxy? You mentioned great rabbinic figures of modern orthodoxy, but like, musician? Anyway. We won't name the person who said that on tape right now.
just teasing. Yes. So, as he proved or argued that way, there even seems to be some midrashim that have some notion of fallen angels, which makes people very uncomfortable. The angels rebelling against God, or if it might be, and obviously there's certain echoes. It seems to have echoes of ideas found in other religions. And Bekitzer, angelology is a big deal. It's out there. And I haven't even begun to speak about what's going on in what's known as the Hecholos literature, right? Or as the early mystical literature that we know of from antiquity, of unknown origins and what this relationship to the Masorah is, whatever it might be. But, as I mentioned before, I'll mention it again, it's clear that Jews knew about this stuff, took it seriously. Some Rishonim took it seriously. Hasidic Ashkenazim took it seriously. Others as well. And that's all about angelology, right? And then, of course, there's Hanoch or Enoch, right? Enoch, right? Or Metronome and all sorts of others. You got Gavriel. You got Michal. There's a lot going on in Judaism and angelology. Of which, by the way, I think that the average modern Jew, and here I'm referring to certainly Orthodox Jew, I'm saying, but in the average day-to-day doesn't think too much about what the angels are doing for them. Okay? But if you press someone, ask them, do you believe in angels? Right? Well, the answer, I don't know, what do you think it would be? Yes. Yeah, sure, it's everywhere. But then when you ask them, well, what is an angel? Like, I don't know. Wings? Huh?
What do you think? The first thing you think of is like some Christian picture on some
church. Yeah, you think of some art. You think of the art. But whatever you think about it seems to appear. The artist, Christian artist, got it from Tanakh. In other words, there are some of these images. And now, I guess if you could also ask your average modern Orthodox Jew, do you believe in God? They say yes. And you say, what is God? They're like, I don't know. In other words, we don't really talk about God. That's what we're trying to change this year, right? But in any case, but certainly with regard to angels, people are a little mystified by it. Huh?
We're talking about God, isn't it?
No. Yeah, okay, fair enough. But we haven't gotten there yet. Okay? Now, it's a problem. I mean, a problem in the sense of following that angels in the Rambam affirms this, by the way, are part of the Masorah. In the beginning of 2:6, the Rambam has something very interesting to say, but you don't need the Rambam to tell you this. In fact, the Rambam says, you don't need me to tell you this. The fact that angels exist does not require that a proof derived from the law be brought forward, for the Torah stated this in a number of passages. Okay? In other words, the existence of angels clearly seems to be part of the metaphysics of Judaism. Or I should say metaphysics, because that's our bias, but of the worldview of Judaism, the question is, what is it? What are they? Okay. Now, this relates to our broader discussion about corporality of God in a very interesting manner, which is as follows. You could argue and say, well, every time there's discussion about God in some form of physicality, right? What is that actually referring to?
Is it attributes, how we relate to
them? Yeah, and or alternatively?
Dreams.
No, we would discuss those possibilities. So before we get to Rambam's answers, what could you say? God doesn't have physicality.
Right, Menachem, God doesn't have Menachem Dadol. God gives Menachem temporary physicality.
Angels, right, the Menachem do, whatever it might be, okay? Now, by the way, when we say, Nasa Adam Mesalmenu Kidmutenu, so one way of thinking about when the interpretation given there is for the Malachim, so it could be that God has the mood, but the Malachim have some part of the mood. It seems, by the way, that the Karaites, one of the, again, there's no one Karaite theology. This is a misnomer. It's like there's like there's a set of like, you know, one written book that tells people everything that what the Karaites believe. Oh, they have Machlokas between the Karaites as well, and they too had their Masorot. No. Yeah. But anyway, it's more complex than that. But in any case, but some Karaites, one of the ways in which they dealt with the problem of anthropomorphism was precisely this way. They said, you're right. It's not the God we're talking about. It's rather angels we're talking about. It was just, you know, an interesting way of solving the problem. And the question is, so, is that really accurate or not? Is that within the Masorah? Now, I do find quite amazing And I haven't spent too much time on the past few days, but I've been, you know, poking around. It is amazing to me how little there is out there of a systematic presentation about what Rishonim and Achronim have to say about angels. Very little. Compared to other topics. For example, about what God is and negative theology we get to, I mean, it's very clear there are very specific chapters that elaborate upon it in many different works, whatever it might be. I'm talking about sort of in the philosophical world, okay? There isn't that much written on it in a very systematic manner.
Like even you said, it bothers people less. I mean, in general, it's always bothering people less. The idea of God.
Yes, but you got to explain it. You have to explain it. And by the way, once the Rambam, as we see, who does address it in multiple places in very explicit terms, throws down the gauntlet, so to speak, you'd expect more. Again, I'm not saying it's not out there. And also, it gets to very specific claims of the Rambam and discussions. And I'm not saying it's not out there, but it's not in the elaborate way which I would have expected. Surprise. By the way, even academic literature, there's a lot of talk about angelology and angels and in antiquity. Okay, but in terms of getting into what people have said about, you know, times of Rishonim and sort of Achronim, again, Kabbalistic works is definitely a little bit more of it going on. And okay. Now, by the way, there are some Kabbalistic works which seem to attribute corporeality of some form or another to angels, and some form of physicality. There is a little bit of that. The question is, where are they? I haven't seen them. Obviously, no one's bumping into them. But it is out there. And it's fair to I think it's fair to postulate that many Jews, both laity and lay people and chachamim in various forms or another, believed in some form of corporeal angels in the heavenly spheres or whatever it might be throughout the centuries. I think that's fair to say. Now, what does the Rambam have to say about this? Okay. And the Rambam, is, you know, as usual, the Rambam just tells it the way it is, or the way he thinks it is, right? Now, he says this in a few places. Since we're up to here, let's see what the Rambam has to say. But in order to understand this a little bit, well, let's just see in 149, then we'll come back to the, which is Mishnah Torah and then other places. The angels, too, are not endowed with bodies. Okay? Right from the get-go, right? 149, remember, he's talking about God. Angels as well, they don't have bodies. What are they? Intellects separate from matter. However, they are objects of an act. What does that mean? And God has created them. Meaning God is a nivra. As the sages say in Bereishit Rabbah, the flaming sword which turns every way, right? And I was talking about in end of, you know, in Gan Eden, right? Through this dictum, they have made it clear that angels are not endowed with matter, and that outside the mind, they have no fixed corporeal shape. Okay? Whereas angels have no matter, meaning they have no physicality.
It's just okay? How we perceive them.
What are they? But all such shapes as being described are only to be perceived in the vision of prophecy in consequence of the action of the imaginative capacity, as will be mentioned when we get to discussing prophecy. We'll see that in 2:6, get to momentarily. Whereas the Rambam is saying right now, there are no forms of physicality. I shouldn't use the term forms here, because forms is a philosophical term. Right? There's no matter. Angels have no, are not comprised of, they exist, but they are not comprised of matter. Right? And any image that we have of them is merely an image that is created by the imaginative faculties, right? Imagination, as seen in prophecies. Boom.
How
does
he understand Saddam then?
Huh?
How are you going to understand Saddam then?
Saddam, Avram. Yechezkel, Daniel, we got a whole list here. Answer, prophetic visions.
But if you're dreaming during them, how do you explain Saddam?
You're not dreaming. You're having prophetic vision.
But the Rambam says that only happens when people don't have that whilst awake, you know?
Okay,
like,
Yechezkel, I can understand how it's a prophetic vision. Like, yeah. To say that a prophetic vision pulled Lot inside his house and closed the door.
Yeah.
So how does that all work, right? There's all sorts of... Avram brings them food. He brings them. No, no. The idea is that
he never really brought food.
He never brought them food, right? It's an image.
But Sodom has physical destruction and there's a physical movement of them.
You understand all the problems. Okay, but let's see what he says first, right? In other words, this is the Ramban and others go to town on him on this, right? But the Rambam is emphatic about this. Now, I know, he says, you already know that it's very difficult for man to apprehend, except after strenuous training, that which is pure of matter, absolutely devoid of corporeal reality. Meaning, I know that you're having a hard time getting this concept that there are entities of major importance that have no corporeal reality. It's perfectly difficult for one who does not differentiate between that which is cognized by intellect and that which is imagined, who tends mostly toward imagined apprehension alone. Okay? And therefore, because of the difficulty of people understanding this concept, we needed a pedagogical tool. And what's that pedagogical tool? The metaphor, whatever you want to call it here. And therefore, the prophets contain dicta whose external sense can be understood to signify the angels are corporeal. But in fact, what? They are not. And he says right afterwards, and this is the same issue with God. Okay. And then he gets into the whole wings thing, and he discusses why wings, what's the significance of wings. So he says here, 49, the motion of flying has been chosen in order to point to the angels being living beings, for it is the most perfect and the noblest of the motions of the irrational animals, and man believes it to be great perfection, right? Also wants to give him a sense that he can flee, there's no harm. A bird is hidden, right? Can go away quickly, right? All sorts of interesting things about.
If they're flying, then why do they need a ladder?
Oh, I'll get the ladder momentarily, okay? Of course they don't need a ladder. Of course they're not flying. No. You understand? That question, if the Rambam was here, the Rambam would, like, kick you out of sheer. he'd be nice and say, yeah, well, I know what you mean to say is, how do you explain, interpret the Sulam Yaakov, right? Okay.
So why is the Rambam giving such a deep explanation of why wings and why picture that if he said just then there is no such body, there is no such body?
No, but there is a depiction of them.
Why is he giving an explanation of depiction?
Oh, because he wants to explain why that metaphor was used.
Where does that depiction even come from?
There are various... there are various passages along this line. Okay. Now, let's get focused. Okay, now, yeah, with the Yechezkel, right? And he says, oh, by the way, it's not only birds. Oh, don't get me wrong. He knows that. I'm saying, he says, they're not always with it. He's got the Yechezkel, he got the face of an eagle, he got a foot of a calf, he got all sorts of interesting things going on. Okay, so the Rambam has told us here right now, angels are, so what are they? I mean, what is this entity? Okay? Which he says exists. So here, the Rambam tells us in 2:6. I'm sorry, because I didn't anticipate before, and I didn't tell you to bring the second half here, but that's enough. In section 2, in 6, where he's starting to get into proving God's existence and the nature of the world and all sorts of other things, okay?
What's section 2 about? As a whole.
There's a lot of things going on there, but a lot of sort of the classic issues of God's existence, prophecy, providence, things like that comes up in section 2. And here he's talking about sort of, he's building up to proofs of God's existence and understanding creation. But if you want to understand creation, God, who's the prime mover, right, you got to know it exists in the world. Okay? So here he gets into Aristotle's theory of separate intellects. Okay, now this is a complex concept, right? And I brought here this guy, Raphael Yospi. There are various intros to medieval Jewish philosophy out there. They all have their strengths and weaknesses, but that's pretty not bad. It's a little bit dense at some points, but pretty good. There are several of them out there. You're welcome to take a look at this. But in this issue, he very nicely sort of sets it up for us and describes it here. I'm happy to follow up afterwards. So he talks about how the Rambam and others before him were clearly influenced by the way in Aristotle here, and before them really the Arab philosophers, the Muslim philosophers that adopted the notion of active intellects. And he describes it here in the whole cosmology. But what you have here is the various spheres. Yeah, let's look at the picture here, which are the various intellects. Okay, you can see here. This, by the way, if it looks familiar, is just a pictorial depiction of the spheres as depicted clearly in Paragimel of Sodei Torah. It's just fleshing this out for you. Okay, there's a whole discussion here about it. Now, it's interesting, and you can pass it around if you want. We'll get there. Okay, now. Now, by the way, you're going to see, because the way, meaning intellect here in the sense of that these are factors that cause things to happen in the world that have no physicality, okay, and are part of God's universe, okay, for these purposes. Now, by the way, in 2:3, he says, listen, it hasn't been proven, Aristotle's notion of separate intellects, but know that it's really strong and there seem to be very little doubts about it. I mean, there are a few doubts about it. So he accepts Aristotle. He tells you, it's not like he beats around the bush. He tells you very explicitly. And then he comes and tells you in 2:6 the following. The fact that angels exist does not require that proof deriving from the law be brought forward. For the Torah states in a number of passages. Okay, he talks about the term Elohim, or Elohim, right, the thing in the term, right, it might be, how it's used in other source places as well. And now he says as follows. Now, a chapter made clear for us that the angels are not bodies occurs previously in the treatise. So that's 149. This is also what Aristotle says. Okay, but there's a difference in the terms. For he speaks of separate intellects, and we speak of angels. What's the Rambam doing here? 2:6? Telling you, Aristotle's understanding of the universe is correct. That's what he says in 2:3. And his theory of active intellects can be found in the Torah. And where can it be found in the Torah? Angels. Okay, now what exactly do these active intellects do? So this notion of active intellects is basically the forces of how the world works.
And the spheres are the angels, and the angels are just a sort of species. How he shows his
midos, so to speak? Let's look at what it says. Now, he says that the term angel, right, what does an angel mean? What is an angel? Angel's a shaliach. Okay? Now, you already know the meaning of angel's messenger. Accordingly, everyone who carries down order is an angel. So that the movements of animals are stated in the text of scriptures as if they've done through an angel. And the movements of every living being or force are according to that motion as if they're done through an angel. Now, when you get to that statement, all forces in living being come from, accordingly, angels. Now,
except for humans?
No. He's very explicit about humans, okay? Now, here's what it says here. A circumstance that should confirm your opinion, the assertion that individual, natural, and psychic forces are simply called angels. So, what's an angel?
Everything.
The Yetzer Hara, the Yetzer Tov. It's an angel.
But how does he deal with free will then?
It's free will. Let me ask the question, how the world... No. Now, this is the question. Now, you're asking the following. Well, how does he deal with free will? The answer is, let me just take a step back. Meaning, that's a problem, but in the following sense, it's not a problem. Right? What does an angel essentially become? Just the nature and the natural forces in the world. And everything else that goes on in the world, whether it's a natural force or a psychic force, that's an angel. So when Yehuda, right, goes to Tamar, right? Rabbi Yochanan said Yehuda wanted to pass by Tamar, but the Holy One, blessed be He, caused the angel put in charge of lust to present himself to him. Okay? An angel then, right, taiva. And by the way, the taiva that this angel causes is very explicit. Wasn't just a taiva, but an angel causes what? The shechva zera. Right? He means to say the force of orgasm, as he translates it here. That's what an angel does. There's a very base physical actions are done by angels. Right? Now, when you make such a statement, right, what you're basically saying is that what the malachim are, at least in terms of what they do in the world, is basically equivalent to his understanding of nature. Now, his understanding of nature is a very specific understanding based on Aristotle of the separate intellects, upon which he then tells you, right, that the separate intellects exist in the world, he adopts their still teen form, he puts into Yesodei HaTorah, right, and tells you this is what the Torah has to say as well. Right? But all sorts of notions, then once you say such a thing, right, all sorts of notions now about the nature of angels having corporeality, whatever it might be, is ridiculous. Because what are angels? Basically, angels are just the Torah's way of speaking about how the natural or psychological even world works.
Why is it even meant? Why can't just say Yehuda?
What does he need them for? He needs it. What do you, I'm sorry, I understand.
Why if you were around the word of God, why would the Torah be, you know, so to speak, my court with all the main people making scenes with people? Why wouldn't they just say,
I mean, here's the question. I'll take the question back another step. Why does God even need angels? And the answer is, this is the way God works. And the Torah sometimes describes us how God works. Now, there are other times when there are angels appear, and this is something different. These are the fact that all prophetic visions are what?
I'll give it to angels.
So he says it in 2:6 as well. We have already seen the fact that every form in which an angel is seen exists in the vision of prophecy. Whereas any time you thought, we're seeing something, the answer is, no, you're not. And what does he do with Lot? They appear in like of a man to Lot whose power was weak. They appear in like of a man. What is this to say? This is all a matter of prophecy. And the, right, and he goes and says, and by the way, in the 2:6, the only difference between our version of how angels are and Aristotle's version is that in our version, they were created, the angels. In Aristotle's version, they are eternal. Why does he say that? What is this basically saying?
There is God.
Because in Rambam's version, God created the world, and the world is composed of angels, you could say. Words, think of angels sort of as atoms, at least in the physical world. Or we would think of as atoms. Yeah? So the Rambam has just very strongly neutralized the whole notion of angels. And now, in 2:42, that's where he discusses prophecy. So here too he says, listen, all these images are quite simply just images of prophetic visions. They aren't real. Now it's referring to Yaakov's angel. Now then you might ask, if that's the case, then why is he, what happens to the hip?
Why is it limping?
Balaam's donkey's this way. Avram's guest are this way. Yeah. And that's what the Rambam just feels about angels. In other words, you might have thought that angels are some form of thing. They're not. They're just the way that God works the world. And that's how reduced it is. And how does God work the world? The way that Aristotle told us God worked the world. And by the way, it's very interesting here. He makes an interesting line here in 2:8. It's actually very significant for the whole science and Judaism debates, where he says, listen, you know, there are times when there are people believe in different things about how the world works, physical level. So for example, it used to be thought that when the heavenly bodies create sound. But that's not true, and Aristotle showed it's not true. And in this matter, we simply follow the correct opinion. Okay? And he proves this notion of the correct opinion, right? From the Gemara in Pesachim Daf, Tzadik Dalet Amud Bet. Where the Gemara there, you know about this Gemara in Tzadik Dalet Amud Bet? That talks about how does the sun, how does the orbit, right, back of the world. I'm saying, yeah. Nathan Slifkin is very big. Before Nathan Slifkin said it, Nathan Slifkin loves this passage because the Mor Nevuchim tells you that's a very significant passage, 2:8. Okay? So what he's basically sort of subtly telling us in two ways, listen, yes, I know I've adopted Aristotelian vision of how the world works, but that's okay, because in these matters, it's just a matter of chokhmah. But significantly, he's basically saying, I'm now taking the Aristotelian version of the way it works, I'm putting into the Torah, and what is the vessel, the vehicle of where this appears in the Torah? This is malachim. And anything else that's going on, right, in terms of when people see malachim, no, that's just a vision. Now, that's just the way prophecy happens. Okay, now, we have to be careful here, because it serves two concepts being tied up into one. Right? On the one hand, you have the separate intellects. On the other hand, you say angels. What are those angels? No, those angels aren't things. The angels aren't real things. They're separate intellects. There's no physicality to them. So everything that's going on in those prophecies is just visions. And it's not like he hides it, because he tells us in the Sodei Torah as well. Right? Perek Bet. He says, Kol Ma Shenibra, he describes three different chalakim, and the third chalak is called the malakim, which have no gufu gviya. Okay? Umazo Shenivim Omrim Shera'u Hamalach Ha'esh, Barak Ha'fayim, Hako B'mare Hanuvua, V'derech Hida. 2:4. And then he discusses the issue, how come angels have different names, and all sorts of interesting things here. Okay? Now, I'm highlighting this to you because this is just another step in the Rambam's form of interpreting the Torah in a manner which removes this element of physicality, right, entirely. And you could say also, gives God a very distant feel. Why are people, and we discussed a little bit last week, on the existential level, why they'd be attracted to some form of physical God? It still bothers me sometimes, although I understand the experiential level, I have that encounter. I mean, you understand why the Torah depicts it that way. But I think people love the idea of angels, because they feel like, there's something here in this world, somehow, some way, that's protecting me, looking out for me, whatever it might be. By the way, this is also, and I know this is a pet peeve of mine, but never miss the opportunity to talk about it. Right? This is why intercessory prayer, according to the Rambam, makes no sense. And the Rambam is very clear about Machnisei Rachamim is illogical for a very simple reason. What are angels?
Nature.
Sorry?
Nature.
They're the natural force of the world. What is this whole notion? It's just the way God runs the world. So, yeah, they can't change anything, do anything. That's what he tells you in the Yugam Likaram. He just says this is stupid.
Why do we do something like if it's the natural way of the world, then why do we have, like, Tilata Geshem or something like that?
Well, before we get, hold on one second. I'm trying to finish the point and then come back to it. So but his point, I'll take a question in a second, so I won't get it to say. But his point is going to say, listen, the angels, they're just the active intellects. It's just the way the world is, right? Physics works. Metaphysics and metaphysics here, right? So don't bother praying to entities which are just being operated by God and how he runs his world. And people are very attracted, I think, to the notion of angels, because they want this sense on an existential level of feeling that there are powers out there in the world, God's powers, that are out there to help them. Of course, once you say that, you also have to admit the fact that there are powers out there in the world that are out there to hurt you. Malach HaMavet, right? All sorts of stories like that, which we don't like. All sorts of menhagim. Boy, the Malach HaMavet, whatever it might be. But the Rambam's like, Malach HaMavet. You see how radical, right?
And does he systematically go through like the Agadah no. Apply differently?
No.
And he just leaves that to you. To,
yeah.
I think all the stuff like Malachim always waited for the thing to break and then.
There are certain stories that he does discuss in his writings, and others he.
Does he discuss Sodom explicitly, though, as in the issues with the prophecy in Sodom, Marnevuchim?
He does somewhere. He mentions it. I mean, he mentioned it briefly in 242.
He wasn't dealing with the issues.
No, he doesn't raise all the issues. And part of the tax that gets made on them by the Ramban, for example, at the beginning of Vayera, or Perek Yuchem Vayera, they are right. It's a famous passage, but there are others as well. Is Rambam? Look at the story. All sorts of issues here. But wait, does Sodom get destroyed, or does it not get destroyed? Which part was the vision? Was it just the vision of the people come and take him out? All sorts of things here. And again, this is always going to be the classic difficulty with allegorical interpretations of the Torah, which is that once you turn things into visions, allegories, similes, whatever it might be, you get into a rut of basically saying, the Torah just really doesn't happen. Okay. Now, I'm sorry. So your question was, so why did you feel a Geshem? What do you mean by why do you feel a Geshem?
Anything like that where something is the natural way that the world works, then why would you have to then do some kind of... Either a bracha, you know...
Okay, now, according to what we've said until now, you could still say you're just praying to God, right? You're praying to God. That's just basically to have a bakasha. So I don't see that as being a particular problem, except we're going to get into problems when we start understanding, well, what exactly is God's intervention in this world? Okay, and as you see, slowly but surely, the Rambam is building up this distant God, if you will. The question is, how distant is he? I thought you're getting something different, which is that there are various tefillot out there, certainly in which invoke malachim, and not only machlis harachim type of thing, but just baruchuni shalom, all sorts of things. They talk about involvement in the world, whatever it is, and it makes no sense to the Rambam, according to the Rambam, which is just one of the ways of highlighting the fact that the Rambam's opinion on these issues was not universal by any means. And when you are a Maimonidean, at least on this issue, you have a real struggle with certain rituals. Again, rituals, tefillot, whatever it might be, like Machnis Rachim is the classic one.
What else?
I'm saying all sorts of notions of what, like, even tefillah of Shalom Aleichem, whatever it might be. So Baruchuni L'Shalom has intercessory prayer element of it. But the whole notion of the blessings of the angels, what are all these passages? I mean, I'm saying just the Rambam throws you into a complex issue. You have to explain all these passages, both in Chazal, as well as in Tanakh. I'm trying to think this through. If he says this, see in 146, I mentioned this before. The Rambam tells us that Chazal themselves never thought God was corporeal. I don't remember if he says that with regard to Chazal and angels. I gotta take a look here. I gotta take a look. Okay, now, by the way, just to be clear, and I don't go into this too much, but just to say that the Rambam thinks that there's always some form of allegorical interpretation does not mean that he always interprets it in the same way. Okay, now this is also interesting. So, when you take a story like the ladder, Yaakov, so if you take a look at 2:10, which I don't have, right? You should look for yourself afterwards, so maybe for homework. So take a look at 2:10, you'll see the Rambam, by the way, he also there discusses the issue of mazal, right? And he works that out without too much of a problem, right? And he also, by the way, here says, nature is divine decree of the spheres and the forces in the world. Is this okay? And then, when he gets into Sulam Yaakov, right, in terms of Jacob's ladder, right? So here, he, based on the Medrash, he says there are only four angels, okay? And he uses that to interpret a whole sort of sense of how the spheres work. As it says in 2:10. Okay, take a look there. Now, in 1:15, he also discusses Sulam Yaakov. And here he says, he talks about, he's talking about standing, stand erect, okay? And he says, thy word stands erect in heaven. This means everything's stable and content, right? And with the Sulam Yaakov, when he says that God was standing erect on top of it, what does this mean? That is, was stable and constantly upon it, I mean upon the ladder. Everyone who ascends does so climbing up this ladder, so he necessarily apprehends him who is upon it, as he is stably and permanently at the top of the ladder. And the angels are what? Are the prophets. Which is basically teaching that what? That the prophets go up certain rungs depending upon the ladder of their knowledge. There is basically what is the message of the Sulam. The Sulam is teaching us the various levels of prophecy. Okay? Now, if you take a look in Yisodei HaTorah, Perek Zayin, so here, right? Perek Shvi, Halacha Gimel. He says here, everything told in Navi is given in an image. And he says, Kmo asulam shura Yaakov avinu malachim alim verdim bo, v'hu mashal lemalchuyot u'shibudan. What is this a reference to? We know some Rashi, the Medrash on Rashi. What is this a reference to? The what? The various malchuyot that he sees as he goes to the galut that will come upon the Jewish people and enslave them. Very interesting, right? Because the Rambam now is giving very different interpretations in from the Mishnah Torah to the Mor Nebuchim for the same exact event. Now, by the way, it's not the Rambam did this in many ways. In many ways, the Rambam is picking and choosing from different Midrashim on this topic. Okay? Now, my point is just to say that how the Rambam interprets all of these stories and what these Malachim are doing is not necessarily going to be consistent, as you see, for example, in this case, right, in terms of the different interpretations he gives for the story of the angels and the ladder. Right, there's something very different talking about Shibud Malchiot versus the nature of prophecy versus the nature of the Galgalim in the world. There's three different interpretations of the story. Now, you could say that, as the Rambam tells us, there can be stories that have multiple messages, multiple teachings, whatever it is. I'm just trying to highlight here the fact that the Rambam certainly does not necessarily have a uniform position about how it interprets these stories, but what is uniform is what it's not, namely, to be taken literally. Angels, not physical entities, they don't have any form of matter, rather they are the active intellects which are a reflection of the way that God operates the world which he has created. As opposed to Aristotle. But besides the creation factor, everything that Aristotle says is right, and we read that into the Torah. Like I said, that's why they burnt the book. Okay. Mirz Hashem, next week we don't have Shir, right?
Oh.
Next week is...